Hello, and welcome to Silver Threads, a weekly program of information on how you can make your senior year shine. I'm Kathy Van Skoik. As I am here at Reach Out Radio to record this program on March 8th, International Women's Day, and since March is Women's History Month, I've chosen some current readings from AARP and the Women's History Project to share with you today. From the National Women's History Project, this year's theme, Nevertheless, She Persisted, and some of its honorees. And from AARP, 9 Unique First Ladies Through History, and Noteworthy Mothers of Presidents, along with words of wisdom from some of our favorite women and women's words to live by. But first, a bit of history about Women's History Month from Wikipedia. In the United States, Women's History Month traces its beginnings back to the first International Women's Day in 1911. In 1978, the School District of Sonoma, California, participated in Women's History Week, an event designed around the week of March 8th. In 1979, a 15-day conference about women's history was held at Sarah Lawrence College from July 13th until July 29th. Chaired by historian Gerda Lerner. It was co-sponsored by Sarah Lawrence College, the Women's Action Alliance, and the Smithsonian Institution. When its participants learned about the success of the Sonoma County's Women History Week celebration, they decided to initiate similar celebrations within their own organizations, communities, and school districts. They also agreed to support an effort to secure a National Women's History Week. In February 1980, President Jimmy Carter issued a presidential proclamation declaring the week of March 8, 1980, as National Women's History Week. The proclamation stated, "From the first settlers who came to our shores, from the first American Indian families who befriended them, men and women have worked together to build this nation. Too often the women were unsung and sometimes their contributions went unnoticed. But the achievements, leadership, courage, strength, and love of the women who built America was as vital as that of the men whose names we know so well. As Dr. Gerda Lerner has noted, women's history is women's right. It's an essential and indispensable heritage from which we can draw pride, comfort, courage, and long-range vision. I ask my fellow Americans to recognize this heritage with appropriate activities during National Women's History Week, March 2 to 8, 1980. I urge libraries, schools, and community organizations to focus their observances on the leaders who struggled for equality. Susan B. Anthony, Sojourner Truth, Lucy Stone, Lucretia Mott, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, Harriet Tubman, and Alice Paul. Understanding the true history of our country will help us be comprehending the need for full equality under the law for all people. This goal can be acknowledged by ratifying the 27th Amendment to the United States Constitution, which states that equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex. Well, Carter was referring to the Equal Rights Amendment, which has never been ratified, not to the amendment, which did become the 27th. In 1981, responding to the growing popularity of Women's History Week, Senator Orrin Hatch and Representative Barbara Mulkowski co-sponsored the first joint congressional resolution proclaiming a Women's History Week. Congress passed their resolution as law, which authorized and requested the president to proclaim the week beginning March 7, 1982, as Women's History Week. In 1987, after being petitioned by the National Women's History Project, Congress passed Public Law 100-9, which designated the month of March 1987 as Women's History Month. Between 1988 and 1994, Congress passed additional resolutions requesting the authorization of the president to proclaim March of each year as Women's History Month. And going now to Women's History Project. In 1987, we know Congress designated March as National Women's History Month. This creates a special opportunity in our schools, our workplaces, and our communities to recognize and celebrate the often overlooked achievements of American women. Each year, there is a special theme, and women whose lives exemplify that theme are selected as national honorees. Nevertheless, she persisted, honoring women who fight all forms of discrimination against women. The 2018 National Women's History theme presents the opportunity to honor women who have shaped America's history and its future through their tireless commitment to ending discrimination against women and girls. The theme embodies women working together with strength, tenacity, and courage to overcome obstacles and achieve joyful accomplishments. Throughout this year, we honor 15 outstanding women for their unrelenting and inspirational persistence and for understanding that by fighting all forms of discrimination against women and girls, they have shaped America's history and our future. Their lives demonstrate the power of voice, of persistent action, and of believing that meaningful and lasting change is possible in our democratic society. Throughout the theme, we celebrate women fighting not only against sexism, but also against the many intersecting forms of discrimination faced by American women, including discrimination based on race and ethnicity, class, disability, sexual orientation, veteran status, and many other categories. From spearheading legislation against segregation to leading the reproductive justice movement, our 2018 honorees are dismantling the structural, cultural, and legal forms of discrimination that for too long have plagued American women. The addition to national and community honorees, we recognize the ongoing persistence of our mothers, grandmothers, aunts, sisters, neighbors, and friends. We hope you'll join us in celebrating all women this month and throughout the year. Nevertheless, she persisted was a phrase born in February 2017 when Senator Elizabeth Warren, Democrat from Massachusetts, was silenced during Jeff Sessions' confirmation hearing for Attorney General. At the time, Warren was reading an opposition letter penned by Coretta Scott King. In 1986, referring to the incident, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican from Kentucky, later said Senator Warren was giving a lengthy speech. She had appeared to violate the rule. She was warned. She was given an explanation. Nevertheless, she persisted. Feminists immediately adopted the phrase as hashtags and memes to refer to any strong women who refuse to be silenced. And now some of the honorees. The first is Pauli Murray, who lived 1910 to 1985. She was a civil rights and women's rights activist decades ahead of her time. Facing lifelong discrimination based on her race and sex, she persisted and became an accomplished attorney, author, activist, academic, and spiritual leader. Pauli Murray was extremely bright as a child. She finished first in her class at Howard Law School, where she was the only female student. Despite her academic prowess, she was denied admission to the University of North Carolina Graduate School in 1938 due to her race and denied a fellowship to Harvard Law in 1944 due to her sex. She went on to be the first African-American awarded a law doctorate from Yale, 1965, and later became the first African-American woman to be ordained an Episcopal priest in 1977. Murray was a critical figure in both the civil rights and women's rights movements. In 1940, 15 years before Rosa Parks, Murray was arrested for sitting in the whites-only section of a Virginia bus. She coined the term Jane Crow, referring to the intersecting discrimination faced by African-American women, and was highly critical of sexism within the civil rights movement. JFK appointed her to the Presidential Commission on the Status of Women in 1961, and she was co-founder of the National Organization for Women. Many of Murray's legal theories were decades ahead of their time, and she is considered a pioneer of women's employment rights. Her papers, while a Howard Law student, argue against segregation and were used over a decade later in the landmark Brown v. Board of Education, 1955. Similarly, in the early 60s, the U.S. argued that the 14th Amendment forbade sex discrimination, this a full 10 years before the U.S. Supreme Court came to the same finding in Reed v. Reed. Pauli Murray died in 1985. The Episcopal Church honored her as one of its holy women in 2012. And in 2016, Yale University announced it would name a residential college after Murray. And now, Elizabeth Peratrovich, 1911 to 1958, an Alaska native of the Tlingit Nation, Elizabeth Peratrovich was a civil rights leader ahead of her time. Her activism led to passage of the Alaska Territory's first anti-discrimination act. She grew up in a small Alaska village and was orphaned at a young age. She and her husband Roy, also of the Tlingit Nation, had three children and moved to Juneau seeking more opportunities. Well, during the 1940s, Juneau was segregated, and the Peratroviches, previously having lived in small, mostly Native towns, were shocked at the level of discrimination. Signs in shops and public facilities reading, "No dogs or natives allowed," were all too common. Neighborhoods and schools were segregated, and it was difficult for Alaska Natives to secure good jobs. As a leader of the Alaska Native Sisterhood, she refused to tolerate the second-class treatment and petitioned the territorial governor to end segregation. An anti-discrimination act failed to pass the territorial legislature in 1943, so Peratrovich continued to lobby for civil rights, and in 1945, the law again came for a vote. Peratrovich was the last to testify, saying in part, "I would not have expected that I, who am barely out of savagery, would have to remind gentlemen with 5,000 years of recorded civilization behind them of our Bill of Rights." She eloquently spoke of the personal hardships experienced by her children and her community as a result of segregation. Her impassioned testimony and tireless lobbying efforts are credited with securing the legislation's passage. On February 16, 1945, the Alaska Territory passed an anti-discrimination act to protect the civil rights of Alaska Natives. The law was the first of its kind nationwide and passed a full 19 years before the U.S. Congress passed the Civil Rights Act of 1964. And now a little bit of a profile of some of the other honorees. Jill Moss Greenberg is a lifelong crusader for fairness and the rights of underrepresented groups. She has been a trailblazer in addressing the intersection of women's rights and the history of issues of race, national origin, disability, religion, age, sexual orientation, gender identity, homelessness, and socioeconomic status. For over 35 years, Arlene Meyerson has been a leading attorney in disability rights law, including playing a key role in drafting and negotiating the American with Disabilities Act, the ADA, and amendments to the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, IDEA, litigating precedent, setting disability rights cases, and teaching disability rights law. And we'll go on now to, from AARP, noteworthy mothers of presidents. Their sons attained the highest office in the country, but these moms were notable in their own right. By Cheryl Bond Nelms. Plantation proprietor Mary Ball Washington, the mother of six, managed a 600-acre ferry farm plantation in Stafford County, Virginia, where her firstborn, George Washington, spent much of his childhood. George later bought a home for her in Fredericksburg, Virginia, now a historic house museum near the University of Mary Washington, which was named after her. She died 4 months after her son was sworn in. Nancy Hawkes Lincoln, the mother of Abraham, the nation's 16th president, was a seamstress who was described as intellectually inclined, with a strong personality. A poem titled Nancy Hanks was published as a tribute to her in 1933 and set to music in 1941. The West Virginia House of Delegates officially recognized her birth site in 2009. And she also has a Hollywood connection. Actor Tom Hanks is her third cousin, four times removed. Nancy died when Lincoln was 9 years old. Midwife to doctor, Phoebe Elizabeth Dickerson Harding was the mother of eight, including son Warren G., the nation's 29th president. Phoebe worked as a state-licensed midwife in Ohio and later studied to become a homeopathic physician like her husband, George Tryon Harding. She died at age 66, 11 years before her son took office. Martha Ellen Young Truman, the daughter of Missouri farmers, was a Confederate Army supporter during the Civil War. When her son, Harry S. Truman, was chosen as Franklin D. Roosevelt's running mate in 1944, Martha told the press that Truman didn't want the job and she preferred he remain in the Senate. The public appreciated her candid style, and she was often described as colorful by the media. She lived to see her son become the 33rd president before she died at 94. Rose Kennedy, a prominent philanthropist and socialite, she was the author of JFK and Eight Other Children, the matriarch of a political dynasty, no stranger to politics. Her father was mayor of Boston from 1906 to 1908 and again 1910 to 1914. In 1951, Pope Pius XII granted her the title of Countess in recognition of her exemplary motherhood and charitable works. Dorothy Ayer Gardner Ford, the mother of Gerald R. Ford, divorced her first husband, Leslie Lynch King, in 1913. She left him 16 days after she gave birth to their son, who became the country's 38th president. 3 years later, she married businessman Gerald Rudolph Ford, and although Ford never formally adopted the child, the young man legally changed his name from Leslie L. King Jr. to Gerald R. Ford Jr. in 1935. Dorothy died at 75, 7 years before her son rose to the presidency. Southern charmer Lillian Gordy Carter. A nurse, author, and Peace Corps volunteer, she published two books during her son Jimmy Carter's presidency and headed a U.S. delegation to Yugoslavia with Vice President Walter Mondale. Miss Lillian was known for her Southern charm and respected for aiding the sick. In her honor, Atlanta's Emory University established the Lillian Carter Center for International Nursing in 2001. Dorothy Walker Bush, she, the mother of George H.W. Bush, the 41st president, was born in Maine and had five children. Dorothy lived a privileged life, but was active in public affairs and worked with the Red Cross. Religious and athletic, she enjoyed tennis, golf, and swimming. She died at 91, just 16 days after her son lost the 1992 presidential election to Bill Clinton. Virginia Clinton Kelly. She worked as a nurse anesthetist at 35 years and survived the death of three husbands, son Bill Clinton's biological father, William Jefferson Blythe Jr., was killed in a car accident 3 months before Bill's birth. The charismatic and fearless Virginia married Robert Clinton in 1950. She died at 70 a year after her son became the 42nd president. And Stanley Ann Dunham, born in Wichita, Kansas, the mother of Barack Obama, attained bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees in anthropology at the University of Hawaii, where she met Barack Obama Sr. and focused her career on economic anthropology and rural development. While in Indonesia, where she moved to be with her second husband, her research benefited the largest microfinance program in the world. Anne was only 53 when she died of cancer, 13 years before her son took office as our fourth president. And now some unique first ladies through history. Florence Kling Harding. Hardworking and independent, she built a newspaper business in her early years of marriage to Warren G. Harding, though while campaigning for him, she said, "I have only one real hobby, my husband. When he died suddenly in office at age 58, conspiracy theorists claimed that she poisoned him, but historians think it was a heart attack." Helen Nellie Herron Taft, wife of one of our more rotund presidents, William Howard Taft, she reportedly pushed him toward the presidency. He was interested in the Supreme Court, where he later served. The ambitious Nellie attended the 1912 Democratic Convention to stifle personal attacks on her Republican husband, and it worked. But he lost the re-election to Woodrow Wilson nonetheless. Abigail Powers Fillmore. She was a bookish teacher in New Hope, New York, schools when she met future hubby Millard Fillmore. Her student, though at 21, she was just 2 years his senior, as First Lady, she was hardly the life of the party. She preferred reading to socializing. Prone to illness, she died of pneumonia 24 days after leaving the White House. Frances Folsom Cleveland. She was the youngest First Lady, only 21 when she married and moved into the White House. Husband and family friend Grover Cleveland was a bachelor when he took office and 28 years older than his new wife, whose mother, Emma, was considered the more likely mate. Frankie became a favorite subject in the press and a fashion icon. Mary Todd Lincoln, known for her tragic life, including husband Abraham's assassination, the signs of mental illness. Lincoln grew entranced by spiritualism, the belief popular in the 19th century that the dead are ever present. Her son Robert later had her committed to an insane asylum, but a trial found her sane and she was released. Elizabeth Ann Betty Bloomer Ford. Once a part-time model who studied dance with Martha Graham, she married Gerald Ford at age 30, her second marriage, and while at the White House, she supported progressive causes such as abortion rights and equal amendments. In later years, she spoke openly about her struggle with alcoholism, hoping to remove its stigma. Abigail Adams. The first lady to live in the White House. Abigail was wife to second president John Adams, who was also her third cousin, and mom to the country's sixth president, John Quincy Adams. She was politically involved enough to be called Mrs. President rather than Lady Adams, and called for women's rights and the end of slavery. Eleanor Roosevelt. Well known, the longest-serving First Lady, she elevated the position far beyond White House hostess, championing civil rights and the rights of the poor and establishing her own powerful role alongside husband President Franklin D. Roosevelt. Ever eloquent, she said, "You must do the things you think you cannot do." And now some words of wisdom from some of our favorite women. This was compiled by Shelley Emling for AARP, February 2018. From Meryl Streep, 68, "You can't get spoiled if you're doing your own ironing." From Viola Davis, 52, "I don't have any time to stay up all night worrying about what someone who doesn't love me has to say about me." Ellen DeGeneres at 60, "If success is really dependent on someone liking you or not liking you, and you have to teeter on that kind of tightrope of how you're supposed to act and how you're supposed to look and who you are, it's just not a healthy way to live." Barbara Corin, 68, "The difference between successful people and others is how long they spend time feeling sorry for themselves." And Dolly Parton, "If you don't like the road you're walking, start paving another one." She at 72. Sonia Sotomayor, 63, "A surplus of effort could overcome a deficit of confidence." And Candace Bergen, I like this one, I admit that Post-it note sheets that adhere to virtually any surface are now my substitute of choice for retention. And also, these published last year, share. I love this one. The trouble with some women is that they get all excited about nothing, and then they marry him. Connie Chung, 71, I wanted to be scared. I wanted to feel unsure again. That's the only way I learn, the only way I feel challenged. Roseanne Barr, if you spend all of your time worrying about dying, living isn't going to be much fun. Helen Mirren, I don't believe that if you do good, good things happen. Everything is completely accidental and random. Sometimes bad things happen to very good people, and sometimes good things happen to bad people. But at least if you try to do good things, then you're spending your time doing something worthwhile. Oprah Winfrey, 64. Be thankful for what you have. You'll end up having more. If you concentrate on what you don't have, you will never, ever have enough. Lily Tomlin. The trouble with a rat race is that even if you win, you're still a rat. Amelia Earhart. The most difficult thing is the decision to act. The rest is merely tenacity. Rosa Parks. People always say that I didn't give up my seat because I was tired, but that isn't true. I was not tired physically. No, the only tired I was tired of giving in. Edith Wharton. Beware of monotony. It is the mother of all deadly sins. From Michelle Obama. There are still many causes worth sacrificing for. So much history yet to be made. Susan B. Anthony. I declare to you that women must not depend upon the protection of man, but must be taught to protect herself. And there I take my stand. And from Malala Yousafzai. We realize the importance of our voices only when we are silenced. Well, I hope that you have enjoyed and perhaps found some inspiration in the history, the profiles, and the quotes from these wise women and brave women. Thanks for listening, and until next week, I'm Kathy Van Skoik. You've been listening to Silver Threads, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. The audio producer for the show is Maureen Rich, and I'm Kathy Van Skoik. I hope you will join me again next week for more information and updates for making the best of your silver years. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show at our website, wxxi.org.